Good morning and welcome into the Blitz live here on Fan Run Radio, 1340 AM, 105.7 FM here with you for the next couple of hours, getting into your lunch break on this Wednesday, halfway through the week. Well, at noon today at least, we'll be halfway through. Got a lot going on today. SEC meetings, they continue to slowly chug along as we hopefully are getting closer to determining what the SEC schedule will look like. Obviously, the road to Omaha starts this weekend. Regionals this weekend, we'll continue to talk about that. NBA Finals, Stanley Cup Finals all coming up this week. The Preds, they hired a new coach yesterday. A lot to get into today. I'm Charlie Collier. To my left, Matthew Gill. Intern Alex back behind the board, pressing the buttons. Matthew, how you doing today?
Great, Charlie. Another beautiful day in Knoxville, brother. Just an incredible drive. Seeing the mountains. Love it every time I come back. And fired up, as you said, already Wednesday. Just flying right through the week. Hump day. Memorial Day always helps. Let me ask you this. If you are going to have a three-day weekend, do you prefer to have it on Monday or Friday?
Monday.
Me too. It's a no-doubter for me.
You know, it's nice to get it on the front end, but you wish you had it on the back end.
Yeah, and anything, any job you work in, like, or going to school, whatever, Friday's still going to be the best day of the week.
Exactly.
And Monday is going to be the worst.
So it'd be nice to get that Friday off. Like, there's a great feeling when you're out Thursday night, and you can just be like, hey, I don't have anything to do tomorrow. Yep. It's a wide-open Friday, but like you said, yeah, Thursday the vibes are already high. Friday the vibes are already even better. I'd much rather trade in a Monday.
Always, yeah. And then you get the shortened week the following week.
Right.
Then you have the four-day week afterwards.
Yeah. I mean, you get double the payout because you still get the feeling of Friday. You get Monday off, but then also that week you get Monday off. You're basically just dealing with Tuesday and Wednesday, and then you got the great vibes of
exactly.
Thursday and Friday again.
Yeah, no, I think it's a no doubter. I've had that thought since I was third grade, maybe.
There's also something really nice of sitting around Sunday night.
Mm.
You know, maybe you're starting to wind down. It's 9, 10 o'clock.
You don't have the Sunday dread.
Wait a second, I don't have anything to do tomorrow.
Exactly.
I might as well stay up 4 more hours. I got stuff to do. We can do all kinds of things. That's a good point. Monday easily the best day.
Yeah. Is there another one? No, I guess
Father's when
Day.
When is the next?
Father's Day is a Sunday.
Any idea when our
4th
next
of July
Monday off?
Might be like a Tuesday or something like that. I don't even know.
We have Juneteenth on the 19th. Isn't that a national holiday now? We get that off, I think?
Possibly. I don't know. It might depend where you work. I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, Monday's off rule. It's the best.
And then there's Labor Day in September.
Yeah. I didn't want to bring that up. I thought that might be the next one. But I don't want to plan the summer to be over already. We just started.
Is that LSU Florida State? Is that Monday, or is LSU Florida State Sunday, and then Clemson Georgia Tech or something like that?
I'm not sure, but
let's see.
Florida State LSU.
Oh, it's Clemson Duke on Monday.
Okay,
but LSU Florida State is on that Sunday night.
And
so
what a rematch that's going to be! That game last year at the start of the season, incredible.
Yeah, last year the game was excellent. This year, I still think we'll probably get a good game, but we're going to get two top 15 teams.
Yeah, I think Florida State's going to be nice.
I think Florida State will probably be top 10.
They're going to be nasty.
There's been a lot of buzz down in Tallahassee that like Jordan Travis is ready to have a Heisman-like season.
Yeah. I think it's possible. I think he should. I don't know. I haven't looked at the odds or anything, but like I think he should definitely be second. Behind, I would assume Caleb Williams is favored, even though I doubt he goes back-to-back. Just a hard thing to do, but Jordan Travis is right in the running for sure. There's always, like, some dark horse we're not thinking about early. Drake May, obviously, has to be in the conversation. But, like, they've surrounded Travis with a lot of talent too, and that team's gonna be good. Like, I, you know, Drake May might not have as good a record, but yeah, Florida State's nasty. My dad went to school there, so that's always been kind of my side team.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they've had some tough couple years, but
yeah,
but yeah, Norvell's got them going in the right direction. They have an insane defensive lineman, Verse, I think is his name. Is that right? You probably know better than me. He's gonna be like a top five pick, but yeah, Knowles, watch out.
Brett McMurphy just tweeted, ESPN is announcing their 2023 bowl lineup today at noon. Or, I mean, at 12, or at 2.
Okay.
I don't know why. Wait, that.
Which time?
Not noon or 12. Those are both the same incorrect time. Yeah. At 2. At 2 p.m. Eastern time, ESPN announces their 2023 bowl lineup, which I don't know why they choose May 31st on, you know, just random Wednesday at 2 p.m. I don't know.
But it has to be in response to NBC releasing some of their games, right?
CBS dropped a couple of theirs, too.
Or CBS, I mean, sorry. Or was it
both? This is, but maybe. I didn't see an NBC. I only saw CBS.
I thought it did. Maybe it was like a, I don't know.
Either way, we're going to get our 41 bowl games, the schedule of them today. So.
Love it.
Yay. I'm thrilled. I've been just jonesing to figure out when the Camping World Bowl is going to kick off this year. Is it a night kickoff? I need to plan my schedule.
Yeah, you gotta anticipate when the Outback, you know, whether you're going to get a free, what is it, shrimp or...
I think they stopped doing that.
Bloomin' Onion
or...
shrimp, I think. Yeah, shrimp. Like coconut shrimp. Like if the Big Ten one, you got one, and SEC the other. That was a great promotion, though. That's what all bowl games.
Except they always gave the SEC the worst of the two.
What do you think is the worst of the two between the coconut shrimp and the Bloomin' Onion?
The Bloomin' Onion.
You think that's worse? I think.
Are we sure it was shrimp?
I think it was coconut shrimp.
No, it was. It was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Bloomin' Onion versus Do you think that coconut shrimp's the worst?
I think Bloomin' Onion you can have every meal at Outback. Coconut shrimp maybe. You know, if you're like a regular Outback Steakhouse goer, you might get coconut shrimp one out of three times you go, but you can get the Bloomin' Onion every single time you sit down.
I don't think I've been to Outback.
Years.
And
you're a Chili's guy.
I am. I think I've maybe been to Outback once in my life.
Once ever? Really?
Once ever.
Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe not even once.
Yeah, I had a buddy who was a massive Outback Steakhouse fan, so we went all the time.
I think I should be.
Like his favorite steakhouse
guy. I don't know why I'm not, but do we even have an Outback around here?
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah, okay.
Gotta be somewhere, right?
I feel like, yeah, I mean, that would make sense.
Yeah,
the Outback in Vegas, that's a good Outback from what I've heard.
Okay, yeah, probably not on my, like, top five list of
my uncle and my brother used to go there when they were on their Vegas trips, but the last couple of times I've been there, we've not gone.
Yeah. Bobby Flay's place makes a great steak.
In my head, though, I always just thought, if the Big Ten wins, then we're going to get this nice coconut shrimp. We're going to get sustenance. We're going to get meat.
Yeah, so you would prefer the protein.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, oh, shrimp. One's meat. That's got to be the nicer of the option, or the more expensive of the option. The other's just glorified onion rings.
For whatever reason, I never think of seafood as meat. You know what I mean? Like, I think of seafood as, like,
it's only kind of meat.
No, but you're right, though. It definitely is. Like, it is. It lives in the protein world, and therefore, like, you should consider it a meat. But, like, I always separate it from, like, you know, obviously steak and the chickens of the world. Are you a big seafood guy?
No, not at all.
Really? Interesting.
Don't like seafood for the most part. I mean, I like some of it. I'm not super into it. I'll eat some fried shrimp,
yeah,
some grouper, some mahi.
Okay. Those are the major ones, I think. If you do that, like, I would consider you a seafood guy.
It's pretty much it, though.
Yeah. I mean, you're no pescatarian, but, like, you're willing to give it a shot.
This is going to sound strange, given that I don't like most seafood,
mm-hmm,
but I do like tilapia.
Okay, all right. Didn't see that coming, but...
Can you even call tilapia seafood, or is that just river food?
Yeah, I don't know where, like, the river critters, like, play into the seafood category, but, like, if you're open to it, I think that's good. So it doesn't sound like shellfish really does it for you. No crab.
Not a shellfish guy for the most part.
Really?
Again, the occasional shrimp.
Yeah.
Technically?
Yeah, definitely technically, but I'm thinking more like crab or lobster, no, for you?
No. Lobster is the biggest myth in our society.
Okay. Expound on that.
Don't have all the information in front of me, so I might not be entirely correct here, so don't take my, you know, don't take my word for word, but I've read this story before. I'm pretty sure lobster initially was just like sea rodent. Like,
yeah.
It was considered garbage, trash, and then they just started changing the way they marketed it.
Yes.
And started charging more for it and providing less of it. And they just basically tricked everyone into thinking that lobsters is now a delicacy.
Yes.
When it originally just started out as again, like, this is the rodent of the sea.
And I believe it has strong Boston ties in that way. I think they fed all of the prisoners in Boston originally, like when we were only 13 colonies. I think it was prisoner food, literally.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, they just changed the marketing strategy.
I feel like most of the time when people like lobster, they just like butter.
Yeah, okay.
And I like butter. I'm good with butter, but I don't need lobster.
Yeah.
You know, I can put butter on something else.
Yeah.
Butter up some bread.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you say you have a great fry, but you need ketchup with it, it's not that great of a fry. You know, a truly great French fry can stand on its own. Ketchup might enhance it, but like, yeah, if the butter is the thing you're coming for.
I just feel like most people that like lobster, you really just like the butter.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair.
I'm not going to manipulate or be manipulated by Big Lobster.
Or Big Butter.
No, Big Butter, they get me. I'm not going to be manipulated by Big Lobster.
What, okay, so like I love crab, but I sometimes get frustrated by the work that goes into it. Where do you stand on like foods that you have to work to eat? Like I kind of think corn on the cob is a lot of work. Pistachios, even sometimes it's just not, the juice is not worth the squeeze. But I think for crab, like I'm willing to put in some hours.
I don't really put in the work for crab. Mm. You know, I'm good on crab. Just in general, yeah, I don't want to put in that much work.
Yeah,
I'm good with corn on the cob. I love corn on the cob.
Love it off the cob, but like, yeah.
I think it just depends on how good it tastes, really.
Yeah. That's fair.
What other food do you have to work for? Nuts? I don't really, you know, I'm good.
Popcorn's a weird one because you don't have to work to eat it, but you have to work afterwards to get it out of your teeth.
I love popcorn, though.
Yeah.
I eat a lot of popcorn.
Yeah, popcorn rules.
Popcorn, one of my go-to snacks.
It's cheap. It's honestly not, like, that bad for you. Again, it goes back to the butter thing, though. It's like, how much butter and salt do you use? But otherwise, like, popcorn, perfectly healthy,
big fan,
fun, sustainable, nutritious snack.
It's a big day today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As it is every day. Last day of May.
Oh, that's actually true. It's also the last day of May.
Yeah.
It's a big day, though. It's the Ted Lasso finale came out today.
Okay.
The series finale. I'm going to go home and watch it. I'm really looking forward to it. But at the same time, it's a weird place to be in when you get a finale, because I'm really excited to watch it, but also I'm dreading that the second I watch it, then that means, you know, you're never gonna see a new episode again.
Yeah.
It's over. But you don't want to put off watching it because you're excited to watch it. It's just a weird in between.
So I'll be honest, I'm not caught up on Ted Lasso. I binge watched the first two seasons though when COVID started and bawled my eyes out. I can't remember what the scene was.
I'm gonna cry today. I've accepted that as one of the possible outcomes that Wednesday, May 31st is going to bring me.
Yeah, maybe a good
tears.
Cry. Full day. Jimmy B. I will say, though, that I have heard bad things about this season. Would you say it's taking a step back or no?
This season is definitely taking a step back.
And this is the third season, correct, or the fourth?
Yeah, third and final
season. So this is the only season I haven't seen, then.
Yeah, third and final season. It takes it a little bit of a step back. It feels cheesier than normal at times, and the writing doesn't feel as genuine at times. There was like a 3-episode stretch or like a 4-episode stretch where they were like, let's just go through the checklist of like hot button issues and give our opinion on them. And that was a little weird, but then they've really been bringing it home strong.
Okay.
Like the last couple of episodes, they've really closed down the season strong, and even the ones, even the episodes where I thought it was getting a little too cheesy, or they were, you know, working too hard to address certain issues that really weren't super relative, they always brought it back home at the end of the episode. They always brought it back home at the end of the day and still left you with that classic just Ted Lasso good vibe.
Yeah, but go ahead.
Every episode, I mean, you end the episode and you feel good.
Yeah.
That's the magic.
It is a positive vibe show. I just wanted to be clear, though. You're saying you're anti-writer? Because that's a dangerous place to be right now.
Oh yeah, is that a stance that people are upset about?
No, definitely not.
I don't really keep up with what people get mad about. People get mad about too many things these days.
No, I'm just messing with you. I just think
the writer strike's happening right now.
Right, yeah, that's what I was kidding about. But I think there like is no side. I don't think anybody's anti-writer by any means. I think everybody sees the value of them. Even if you don't like what they did with your show or whatever.
I'm a little anti-writer.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I'm tired of them striking. I want my TV shows.
Anti-union as well, then.
Yeah.
All right.
I am. We'll call it. Sure.
No, yeah.
Whatever I got to be to get on-time TV, that's what I am.
Yeah, yeah. We're stuck in rerun season for a while now. And
Writers Guild. What do they need?
I think a lot of the things
that are important.
Yeah, probably, but I think a lot of the things they're upset with is like, what is the future of like AI? Like, can ChatGPT write Law and Order SVU?
Well, I am anti-AI.
Okay,
so
well, that was my next question: is what, where you stand?
Maybe I'm
on
back
this?
On these writers' side. Shoot.
Yeah, it kind of is. You have to be either pro AI or pro writer, I think.
Well, I'm very anti-AI. I despise all of that.
Is there is it a fear-based thing, though? Are you scared of
what? I'm messing with them.
Yeah.
We don't need to open that door.
Dude, when Snapchat added the AI, I tried for so long.
I'm trying to delete it.
It's impossible, Charlie.
Yeah. I refuse. I still haven't accepted the terms and conditions of it, so it just stays there without doing anything. But
yes, but it was made for guys like me and you who are anti-AI, but won't like go through every backdoor channel to get it off our phone either. We're just stuck with that.
Yeah. No, we have AI now. Whoever wrote season 2 of Yellow Jackets, though,
okay.
I'm anti them.
Okay.
Yeah. Whatever they're striking for, the people that wrote the second season of Yellow Jackets, do not give it to them. Give them less. I want to strike against those writers to give them even less.
Yeah.
Take back some
less
of their
rights.
Salary. Yeah.
Yeah, actually only use the AI writing for season 2 of Yellow Jackets.
As much as I am against AI, AI could have taken the first season of Yellow Jackets and wrote its own second season that would have far surpassed what the actual humans tried to do in that just burning pile of garbage.
Yeah.
You seen that show?
No, I have not. That's one I've
amazing
missed.
Amazing first season.
Only heard good things about the first season.
Fantastic first season. One of the better television seasons I had seen. It consumed my thoughts.
And it's
I was
get stuck on an island. I know
it's based on
Crash
in a Wilderness type.
Yes. Yeah.
Type show.
And it's
it
a Lord of the Flies.
Consumed my thoughts. I was so locked in. And then every episode of season 2 just somehow got worse.
Okay.
They just opened a million doors and then just didn't close any of them. And then in the finale, they just tried to close all of them without any of it making any sense.
Yeah, without getting
it
all
together. Just a million major plot holes.
One of my favorite shows of all time had a disastrous second season, and that's True Detective. Did you ever?
I didn't think it was the worst second season
ever. It's not the worst, but what I find interesting about that is the first season of True Detective, I truly think, is the best single season of television of all time. I think it's perfect.
I do, too.
The second
My favorite season ever.
Yeah, and the second season, clearly, if you like it or not, it definitely takes a step back from that. And the thing about it is that guy had his entire life to write the first season. He had worked on it for over a decade to write the first season of True Detective. It was so good that they told him to turn around the second season and be ready to start filming in 6 months. It's like, dude, I worked my entire life. It's the same thing with bands. Like, their first album is always the best because it's their entire life they've been waiting to put out their best stuff. And then the second album flops because they have to push it out for money. And I hate that.
Season three was good.
Season three of True Detective.
Third season, very good.
Because they went back to the formula of multiple timelines. You know,
is there a fourth season of that being written? Do you know?
I've always heard rumors that like it's off and on. It seems more like all the like whatever you know TV rumors, websites, and Twitter accounts always say that it's more like driven by Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey, like want to keep the franchise alive more so than the. I'm not saying his name on purpose, but I think his name's Nick Palazzo. I just didn't want to mispronounce it, but whatever his name is, the creator, director, I think he's kind of done with it, but Harrelson and McConaughey want to keep pushing it, which I think is interesting. Also, did you see the thing probably like a month ago that McConaughey and Harrelson might be brothers? Did you see this at all?
No.
Apparently, Harrelson's dad and McConaughey's mom hung out a lot. Back in the day.
That's awesome.
And they've always said...
I need that to be true.
Yeah, and they've always said that they're, like, you know, have this kind of brother from another mother feeling between them, that they're, like, these soul brothers, and, it, you know, maybe ends up being true. I would like to just believe in that. Like, I don't need a paternity test or anything. I just want to believe that to be true.
Big day today.
Yeah?
Yeah. Season finale. It's Clemson ticket day, too.
Yeah, where you stand on that?
It's going to be hard. Going to be a difficult time to try to get these tickets.
Uphill battle?
Not super encouraged by what we got going on. Logan Quinton, he sent me an email he got yesterday from, I guess, the UT ticket office.
Mm.
And it says that, you know, Monday, yada, yada, yada. Today, you know, 4:30 tickets go on sale, but it says single session prices will be $15 and only standing room only tickets will be available. So I guess today when they go on sale to the public, the only thing they have left is standing room only, is my understanding. That's not a good place to be.
No.
Might be pretty hard to get these tickets. I'm going to have to put some people to work.
Get some feelers out there.
Got that going today. Oh, also we just had Sanogo from UConn.
Yeah, where's he at?
Staying in the draft. Will not return. It's I don't think it's today, but it might be today. The withdrawal deadline. We're nearing the deadline to withdraw from the draft. We're about to get a lot of answers. There's still some teams left waiting, most notably Kentucky right now. But
Sanogo surprises me because I don't know like that teams are super fired up to be drafting a guy of his like skill set and size. But one thing that's amazing about him, and it's one of Jokic's great underrated characteristics as well, is Sanogo just has great hands, catches everything, like just hands of glue. Any rebound can be his. If it's a tip ball scenario, like he's going to win it. And I think there's value in that. And he like is more athletic than you would think a guy his size is.
Well, we'll catch a break here. We'll dive into the story of the day. Hopefully it's a big day and destined to, as the SEC meetings, again, continue along this week. Hopeful that we get an announcement on the future of the SEC scheduling. We'll have more on that on the other side. Stay with us here on The Blitz. All right. Back here on The Blitz, and it's been the topic of conversation for a couple of years now, what the SEC is going to do with their scheduling once Texas and Oklahoma join the conference. But, I mean, we're a football season away from that happening. We are running out of time to make this decision, and as everyone meets down in Destin this week for SEC meetings, it feels like there's momentum towards finally getting an answer this weekend, or you know, this week, the debate between an 8-game SEC schedule versus a 9-game SEC schedule. And to preface this conversation, first of all, whatever happens, it's better than what we have now. Do you agree, disagree?
Yeah, definitely. I am always pro playing more good games. Like, I am tired of the McNeese State second game of the year. You know, those years where we opened up with Appalachian State, Georgia State, which actually ended up being Well, I mean, the Georgia State game, they lose. So, I mean, if you're a Georgia State fan, that's the highlight of your season. But, you know, remember that Appalachian State game, probably like 16 or 17 maybe, to start the year? I mean, some of them, the thing about the smaller conferences coming in to play you early in the season, that is their Super Bowl, so you always get their best shot. And sometimes things like that happen. You get upset by Georgia State, and you get a tough overtime game with Appalachian State. And Georgia Tech also, they had a tough game to start the season. But I am always pro playing more good games. You look like you had some.
To me, it's not about more or less good games. To me, it's what we have now isn't working just because you don't. I mean, I heard 3-and-out talking about this morning. This morning, like A&M has not hosted Georgia yet.
Okay,
you don't play some schools, but in their own building, but once every, 7 years, every 14 years.
Yeah. So you want to see more of the rotation.
Right. I mean, you're seeing a team, again, if they're from the West, you'll play Ole Miss, and then you'll play everyone else in the West before you play Ole Miss again. And then you'll play everyone else in the West, and then you'll go play at Ole Miss. Like, it's ridiculous that there are fans that haven't, that'll go 10 years without getting the opportunity to go to every SEC stadium. Yeah. So you're changing up the schedule. Now you're going to play everyone every other year. That's what I think is all that much better.
And as a guy who loves to go to every away game, like you, it's perfect for you.
But the difference now, 8 games versus 9 games, again, either way, you're going to play everyone every couple of years. So I think that's already an upgrade. Right now, the debate seems money motivated.
Yeah.
Financially motivated, typically is. But the debate between 9 and 8 games, for a long time, the momentum was all for 9. Mm-hmm. And it felt like it was pretty much unquestioned that the SEC was going to play 9 SEC games, and the SEC also thought that meant they could position the ESPN for more money. Because when the original deal with ESPN was agreed upon, it was agreed upon based off of an 8-game SEC schedule. So the SEC was hoping, okay, we move to 9, we can get more money from ESPN. But as we've gone on, that money has not really come from ESPN. They have not gotten the commitment of more money for a 9-game schedule. So then all of a sudden, you start getting more momentum building back towards 8. Because there are coaches in this league, I think, that have realized without that extra bye game, without that extra game that you were just talking about, your App States, your Georgia States, your McNeese States, they're losing a lot in job security.
Yeah.
For some coaches in the middle of the SEC, in the bottom of the SEC, being able to play 4 bye games and then having to just go 2-6 in the SEC to get to a bowl game.
Keep your job a while.
Like that, yeah.
You can survive.
That provides you some job security.
Yeah.
And it is tough some of these bottom feeders in the SEC. So for them to have to, play that extra SEC game, that could be the difference in going to a bowl game. That could be the difference in extra money coming in because you got to a bowl game and the revenue that brings the conference. That can be the difference in hiring or firing a coach. Like, there's a lot that hinges potentially on that extra game. Because if you're Vanderbilt, if you're Missouri, if you're South Carolina, if you're Tennessee, and some of the years we've seen in the last couple of decades.
Mississippi State.
If you're Mississippi State, if you're one of these schools, would you rather have an extra SEC game where you're playing LSU or Alabama or Georgia? Or would you rather Southern Miss, come here. Let's give you $700,000 and whoop up on you.
Yeah, exactly. UConn.
I think that's part of the debate. I don't really know where I fall on this, personally. A 9-game SEC schedule, the pros to me is you get 3 permanent rivals with that and then 6 rotating. Rather than just 1 permanent rival and 7 rotating with the 8-game schedule. That's the pro of a 9-game schedule. I think that's probably my biggest gripe with an 8-game schedule is that you only get one protected rival, and that's not enough. You're going to lose some historic rivalries.
Yeah, the rivalry thing is my biggest worry because in everything that I've read, the Tennessee one becomes Vanderbilt for some reason. And it's like, I get it, but I don't want, as a fan, I don't want that to be the one that is permanent. You know what I mean? Like, you think about how awesome it was to beat Alabama last year. Like, it was almost worth it to lose all those games in a row to upset them last season. And if you lose that opportunity every year and you lose that history and you lose the third, you know, Saturday in October lure behind it, like, that's the SEC is the supreme football conference, and it also, like, has some of the most historic significance. Like, these teams have been playing each other forever. Like, it goes back a long ways. And I don't want to see those things gone. The rivalry thing is the thing I'm most worried about.
With one permanent rival, obviously, you're not going to play Alabama. They're going to play Auburn.
Yep.
You're not going to play Georgia or Florida. They're going to play each other. You're probably, you know, you are left with either Vanderbilt or Kentucky.
Yeah.
Which, on one hand, you know, from a competitive standpoint, playing either Kentucky or Vanderbilt every year, I mean, that's an advantage.
To your advantage, absolutely. But I don't want it to be that easy. Like, right. I want to be able – you have to play against the big dogs.
And you're still going – you know, I get it with the new schedule flexibility. You're going to play everyone every other year. So, if Tennessee were to lose, like, the Florida rivalry, but you still play them every other year, I can handle that. Or if Tennessee were to lose that rivalry with, like, Georgia, but you still play them every other year, I could handle that. I would be really disappointed to not play Alabama every year. I would be pretty disappointed to not play Kentucky every year.
Yeah, definitely.
Want to play Vandy every year, but I would be disappointed to lose either of those. And with an 8-game schedule, you're going to lose that Alabama game. You're going to lose the third Saturday in October. And I'm not willing to give that up.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Rivalries is the biggest thing.
You know, even though I'd rather have that one extra bye game, which I've seen a lot of criticism of the SEC, if they stayed 8 games, you know, they're not keeping up with the other power conferences that play 9-game conference schedules. They're making it easier for their teams. Well, none of the other conferences have to play in the SEC.
Exactly.
So I understand wanting 8 instead of 9. An extra SEC game, I mean, the SEC is brutal. It wears on folks. It wears on teams. That's an extra opportunity to lose a game. That's an extra opportunity to wear yourself down. That's
guys, you know, getting banged up.
I don't think it's necessarily worth an extra game. I don't think the SEC needs an extra game. It's not like they need it for their playoff positioning. I mean, you're going to get a 12-team playoff, and you'll get as many SEC teams in as there are at-large spots, you know, a lot of times. Not every at-large spot, but you're going to have years where you're getting 3 to 4 SEC teams in there. I don't think the SEC needs to jump to 9 games to help themselves in their national standing. You know, they don't really need to jump to nine SEC games for revenue purposes. I don't really think their public image needs 9 SEC games to stay as strong as it is. So, you know, what is the big advantage to 9 SEC games?
I think it is just the competitive aspect. Like I said, it's more good games. And, like, that is kind of the product that you want to sell. And the playoff is a great point because, like, that is kind of influencing all of these conference decisions, like the alignment and the new schedules. That every conference wants to have the most amount of playoff teams they can get in. But now, if it's as it's expanding, like, there's going to be more teams that have losses. Like, you don't have to run the table in the SEC now to get into the playoffs. So I would rather see teams battle-tested through 9 games and then make it to the playoff. They will still get the nod of the committee, as you said, to get those at-large bids and the open spots because it will be acknowledged that the SEC continues to be the best football conference. And even if you come in with 3 losses, you could easily be a 12 seed. You know, and if it's a team like Clemson who runs a weak ACC right now, you could win that game. So I'm always for more good games. It doesn't matter. Like, the aspect of trying to rig it to where teams can run the table in your conference so you can get one of the four teams in the college football playoff, like, that's all done now with the expansion. So play as many good teams, have more parity. I'm all for more games that are competitive. Makes for better Saturdays. I can't wait for college football, by the way.
I mean, the biggest argument, again, you'd be the only Power 5 conference with an 8-game schedule. But, you know, as Hugh Freeze put it yesterday, he said, from a football coach's perspective, the biggest question I have is, you know, just as important as these games are to us, how does the playoff look at it? Are you guys going to put us in with three losses? Are you guys going to put us in with three losses to the playoff but run the table with everybody else? You know, all of these things that are what coaches think about. How do we best position ourselves and satisfy our fans? And I think, again, 9 games could potentially lose you playoff spots, because I don't think the SEC will get treated unjustly if they stick to 8 games. But are they going to lose playoff teams throughout the years because you have a team pick up a dreaded third loss?
I don't think so. I really don't think that's the case. Like, I think the committee will look at it as, this is a gauntlet. The SEC is the toughest conference.
Because if you're in the Big Ten, like, playing an extra game is fine. You still have your Northwesterns and your Rutgers and your Indianas and your Marylands and your Illinois who have had, again, times they've been decently competitive. But in the SEC, you know, the only break you truly get is Vanderbilt.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Even when these other SEC schools are having a down year, I mean, you look at the way their roster is constructed, it still has NFL talent. They still have top-level talent. They still have big, physical, athletic dudes. You know, the opportunity to lose is still right there in front of you, but also just the physical beating that you take playing these teams is there too. I think I still... If it weren't for the conference, or, you know, the protected rivalries, I would still be in favor of 8 games. I think I still am a proponent of an 8-game SEC schedule rather than a 9. Greg Sankey this week, he didn't really necessarily state his opinion. He did kind of hint at that he's pushing for 9. I think the momentum is at the end of the day going to bring this back to a 9-game SEC schedule. But again, like, you could have these borderline teams that are sitting between that 9 to 12 range. And, you know, if they just would have played McNeese State instead of an extra game and, you know, lost to Ole Miss, they could be a playoff team, and now they're not. I think that's going to happen to SEC teams. And that's not necessarily a concern if you're in the Pac-12 or the Big 12 or the Big 10 or the ACC. When you have a conference as good as the SEC is, only playing 8 instead of 9, to me, that almost evens the playing field rather than makes it easier for the SEC as compared to other conferences.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's all about national titles and getting into the playoffs at this point. I'm trying to pull up right now what the final rankings were and see how many three-loss teams were in the top 12. Okay, 0 is the answer. But Florida State, 13. Oregon State, 14. Oregon, 15, all had 3 losses, so right on the outside. Utah, 10-3 at number 8. So, like, and those are not, and none of those teams are SEC teams, by the way. Like, I think teams are not going to be excluded. I don't think teams are going to be excluded from the playoff. And by the way, like, as the Big Ten expands as well, like, there's chances that there's teams with 2 losses who still have really good record or really good seasons. You know what I mean? Like a 10-2 Ohio State team or whatever. Like, I think that's on par with a 9-3 SEC team, in my opinion. Like, I think those translate. And, like, I think both should still be eligible for the playoffs. But at the end of the day, like, it's going to fluctuate every year. Right. There's still going to be years where there is a 13th-ranked team in the SEC, like South Carolina or whatever, who does have 3 losses and believe they should be in there. No matter what, like... With the expansion, it's always somebody's getting left out. Somebody always has to be the last one cut, and people are going to be upset about it. But, like, I don't think whether you do 8 games or 9 games, I don't think it affects the SEC standing in the college football playoff rankings, and, like, I don't think it affects them adding championships to their belt, which is ultimately their goal.
Catch a break here. Big Orange Philly phone lines are open. On the other side, we will head over to the Big Orange Philly phone lines. We got a call from Matthew waiting. So stick with us. Quick break here, and then Matthew on the other side right here on the Blitz. All right, back here on the Blitz, wrapping up hour one. We're going to take a trip over to the Big Orange Philly phone lines, where we got a call from Matthew. Matthew, what is up? Happy Wednesday. You're on with myself and also Matthew. Here, turn the phone pad off. Looks like Matthew might have hung up on us.
Ouch.
Too many Matthews
for the old prank call. Yeah, he may have just thought we were at capacity. We're not. We welcome all Matthews.
Matthews of all shapes and sizes.
Yeah.
Only Matthews we don't welcome. Matthews that root for Alabama or Georgia.
You don't know any of them.
All right. Looks like we got Matthew on the line now. Matthew, how you doing?
Hey, champ. How we feeling? We getting antsy for tomorrow night?
Right now, I'm still just kind of enjoying winning that game seven, to be quite honest. I was in a pretty dark place thinking that we were going to be a part of the worst series loss in NBA history. I was trying to mentally prepare myself to be a meme for the next 50 years. So I'm really just basking in that game seven win right now.
Love it. I guess that brings up my next question is, how long do we give our beloved younger Maxwell King? You know, he still hasn't like called me or texted me back. Like, where do we draw the line at making fun of our friends when their sports teams lose, and what is good clean fun?
Yeah, so caller Matthew's younger brother, big Celtics fan, and for those out of the loop, has not contacted you since you said Sunday. Where I fall personally, I'm anti making fun of your friends when their sports team loses. Unless they lose to your team, then I think you get 1 to 3 chirps and that's it. I like the amount of people that texted me and called me and wanted to make fun of me essentially after Tennessee lost to South Carolina. Just an absurd number of people, and it's so unnecessary. I was in one of the lowest places in my life. Like, I think it depends, I guess, on how serious they are invested into their sports. But, like, for me, if someone wants to come and try to make me feel worse about my team losing when I already feel just about as bad as humanly possible, I don't think you're a good friend.
It's so funny you said that. Charlie, in 2000, what year did we lose to Kentucky with a wide receiver quarterback?
Was that, I can't think of the exact year off the top of my head. Maybe I just tried to black that out.
I turned my phone off because it got to a point where I had 70 text messages.
Yeah.
I don't even think I have 70 friends now.
Oh man. After that South Carolina game, I turned my phone off. I texted my family. I said, I'm turning my phone off. Don't think I'm dead. And then, yeah, I turned my phone off until Monday morning from Saturday night and just didn't leave my room for about 40 hours. And I turned my phone back on. I did have people that thought that I was dead, but I had a lot of people that were sending me things that would have made me pretty angry too. So I'm glad I turned my phone off.
Well, hopefully he'll arise from the ashes here soon. I loved it. It was great because, I mean, living in Tennessee, we don't really have, like, most folks are either going to be non-existent towards the NBA, but I think we can all unite around cheering against the Celtics because every Celtics fan is a Tom Brady fan, and in those eyes, it's just, it's done. The Patriots stink. They have to look forward to Mac Jones and that abysmal team this year, so it's awesome. So enjoy the win, Charlie. Enjoy the series. You know, regardless if y'all win the championship, I think the Nuggets are a hefty, hefty loss for you guys, but who's to say they don't win game one? Because I believe they've won game one in every single series so far, correct?
They have, yes. They've gone on the road and taken game one in every single series.
So I'll leave you with this, Charlie, as a hypothetical for the room. Would you rather your favorite professional sports teams win consecutive championships or your favorite collegiate teams win championships? So in this case, you know, I believe your baseball team is the Nats, the Nationals. So they win the World Series. The Heat win the, obviously, the NBA Finals. And then the Titans were to win the Super Bowl. Would you rather have that or the Vols do the Triple Crown in football, baseball, basketball? And I'll hang up on that. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, man. I'm going to say the thing is, if you went to a school, I feel so much more invested in that. Like, I love professional sports. I love my professional sports teams. But I am so much more invested in the pride of my school that I think college is the right answer.
I think college is the right answer, too. But how cool would it be to win football, basketball, and baseball all in one calendar year? Like, that's more than anything, that's why college is the answer. I mean, remember when Florida was doing it in football and basketball? Just to say that you control college athletics.
Yeah.
That you are just the most dominant program in the country. That's special. Other thing would be pretty cool, too, but, you know, I think it all being the same school, same town, same city. Like, maybe if Nashville had a professional sports team.
Right.
In every sport, this would be different. Like, if Nashville could win a Super Bowl, NBA Finals, and Stanley Cup, and World Series all in one year, it'd be a little bit different. But, yeah, the answer is clearly Tennessee winning all three. I will say, the day that the Washington Nationals won the World Series was the best day of my entire life, and I mean, I'm serious. I don't think anything has ever felt as good in the moment than when the Nationals won a World Series. So, regardless of what scenario you choose, it's going to be the best.
I can vouch for that.
You
can
possibly feel.
You were extremely fired up for the Nationals World Series. And what a World Series that was. Every game was won on the road, correct? Nobody won a home game, if I remember correctly?
Every game was won on the road. I was with you the day that we won Game 7 because I remember I was going back and forth on whether or not to buy champagne.
Yes.
Because I wanted to have champagne in the case that we won the World Series, spray around, do a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But I felt like it was too big of a jinx to buy champagne. So I think I remember I Venmo'd my roommate $50, and I told him either buy champagne with this or do whatever you want with it. But don't tell me either way until after the game's over.
Yeah.
And then the game ended. I was like, man, I really hope he bought that champagne. And sure enough, it was there.
Yes. So I remember you being that fired up. I remember the champagne. I remember all these things. I remember being extremely happy for you. And this brings me back to Matthew's original question. And this might just be specific to me, but I am happy for my friends when their teams loses. But I will equally be as nasty when they lose. Excuse me. I am extremely happy for my friends when their teams win. I was extremely happy for you when the Nationals won. But if they had not won, if they had lost in Game 7, I would have been equally as nasty because I think it's fun. And I think that you just have to have that balance. If you know that you're going to be nice about it when they win, then you're allowed to be a little nasty when they lose. And I think that the Vols in your South Carolina scenario definitely deserve us to get dunked on. That was bad. That was a bad day.
It was the worst day. In general, though, I think a Vols or Titans championship, that would be the top of the top for me. Then a step down if the Nats or the Preds were to win a championship, which the Nats did.
Yeah.
That's still, I mean, pretty much that's best feeling of your life territory, but not as good as I think it would feel if the Titans or Vols won one. And then a step below the Nats and the Preds is the Heat for me.
I think...
And just because the NBA is the least favorite of all the sports leagues.
For you, really. You're a big Heat guy. You love the NBA.
I mean, I do. It's just, I love sports in the NBA.
Yeah.
But
no, I'm just kidding.
I love it the least out of all the things I love.
What I think is very interesting about that is I think it also has a lot to do with you want to be around people who are also celebrating. So, like, if the Vols won a national title and you were here, you would be at the epicenter of all these people celebrating at the same time. And, like, you still have a lot of Titans fans here. The most popular hockey team around here is going to be the Predators. Whereas, like, there is no NBA team really around here. And so, like, you wouldn't be as fired up for the finals as the rest of them because, like, there's just not a ton of Heat fans for you to be around and celebrate. That's the great thing about, like, the college part of it is, like, you have all your college friends to, like, you can, even if you're not around them physically, like, you can text them and be like, dude, that was awesome. We just won the Natty. We are goated.
Well, hour one done. Hour two, it's on deck. Stay with us here on the Blitz.